Okay, so I am, first I just want to say I am calling from Karen Allen Fiber Arts Studio. She is sponsoring this call. You can visit her website at karenallen-fiberarts.com. That's karenallen-fiberarts.com. She's a wonderful knitwear artist and a well-known movie star. And she is assisting me in sponsoring this call today. Today's guest is Gail Stoloff, a wonderful friend of mine and wonderful, incredible recovery story with 30 years of as a registered nurse and in the healing arts. She knew very well all of her options in terms of what she had available to her and used macrobiotics and to deal with her stage 4 breast cancer. It's an amazing story, and I'm so delighted that she's on and happy to share her story, and she's been helping many people ever since. So without any further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Gail and have her share her story. Gail?
Hi, Thea.
Hi.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for doing these calls, and thank everybody for listening and participating. I think it's been great. It's really brought this community together.
Great.
So realizing that I'm on a time frame here and I have a huge, long story, I want to sort of get started and hit some of the highlights of it and leave time at the end, you know, for questions, answers, and discussion. So I'm going to start with when I found the lump, the major lump, the lump to end all lumps in my breast, and that was in 1994. Now, I could go back for so many years. I could go back till I was about 37 in 1994 when I found this big lump in my breast. But I could go back all the way to when I was 12 or 13 years old, back to like 1969. And as far back as I can remember, having health problems, having intestinal problems, having immune system problems, I had lymphatic problems. I had cuts that wouldn't heal and would drain lymph fluid. I had a lot of different episodes. And I had a lot of problems in both of my breasts from the age of like 12, 13 on. I had cysts that would like come to the surface of my breast and sort of erupt and drain. And I went to the doctor. My father was a doctor. In fact, my father's mother, my grandmother, got breast cancer at a very young age, and she died of breast cancer when I was about 13 years old. So there was a lot of information, but everybody brushed my situation off as nothing. They said, it's nothing. It's not serious. It's not a problem. It's nothing. You know, it's normal. And to me, at that young age, I had no experience to really rely on. I had no life experience. I had to rely on these grown-ups in my life, these professional people, to give me the proper advice. And, you know, I had to listen to them, even though to me it wasn't normal. It didn't feel normal. It didn't seem normal. I didn't feel good. And I didn't like having these cysts coming up on my breasts, you know, that were like erupting and draining. But, you know, I listened to what they all had to say. And rather than go through all of the feelings that I experienced, the anger, the resentment, the blame, you know, when years later it turned out that all those nothing things actually really were something, you know, none of that serves me well at this point in my life, so I try not to focus on it. The only thing I focus on in all of those early years before 1994 is the knowledge, the diagnostic knowledge that my own body and my own experience gave me. I really do like to look at that constantly and remember things that happened, signs and symptoms that my body was showing me way back in 1969, years and years before 1994 when I actually developed breast cancer. And I use that as a reference point for my own health and for the people that I do consultations with. And I had, as I, you know, got older, like when I was in my 20s, I had a lump in my right breast that I actually had removed because I was in nursing school at that time. I was studying to become a registered nurse. And while I was going through nursing school, we went through the cancer section of nursing school, and it was so horrifying and it was so scary that I said, this lump in my right breast that's been there for like 10 years that the doctors keep saying is nothing, I have to go find out. And I went to a surgeon, and he actually removed it, and it was nothing. It was a fibroadenoma. It was a fibroid, you know, tumor, not cancer. But, you know, I know now from my study of macrobiotics that a lump, even if it's not cancer, and Michio Kushi teaches this all the time, lumps aren't normal, cysts aren't normal. They are pre-cancerous conditions. So I know that that wasn't normal. But at that time, it was another one of those, it's nothing. And I just continued on my merry way, didn't change anything about my life. And so about 10 or 12 years later, I found the lump in my left breast. And when I found that one, it was like another lump. And I don't know, there was something about that one that just something told me that that one wasn't okay. And I was terrified. I was so afraid that I was almost paralyzed, you know, like I couldn't even bring myself to go to the doctor and get it checked. And part of me said, why should I? All the other ones were nothing. Why should I? Why would this one be anything? Except that, you know, many years had passed, and I really have to say I wasn't living my life right. I wasn't living a healthy lifestyle. I was very stressed out with my job. I was, you know, indulging in, you know, alcohol and drugs here and there, and I really was not taking care of my body. I wasn't even eating. I used to eat sort of vegetarian from a very young age. You know, I was a little hippie girl, and I ate vegetarian food. But as I got older, I even stopped doing that for myself. So I was eating meat again. I was eating a lot of junk food at the hospital. And I just knew that, I knew, it was one of those intuitive feelings. I knew something was off in my body. I did not want to go and get it checked out, but I did. I went to the doctor. I got it checked out. And I went to like three or four doctors, including an acupuncturist, and they all said, you know, you're 37 years old, it's probably nothing. Watch it. Just watch it. So I said, okay. Music to my ears. That's what I wanted to hear. I didn't change anything in my life. Big mistake. I just kept on partying, working, not sleeping enough, eating whatever I wanted. And I watched it. And I knew from my grandmother's breast cancer experience that she had, like, you know, terrible things happened to her body. Her arms swelled up. The cancer was, like, eating away at her chest. You know, it was spreading throughout her body. So I was sort of watching to see if any of that was going to happen to my body, which was so stupid because, you know, that is not the time that you want to say, oh, now it is something. I need to take care of it. I really feel that I should have had it biopsied right away, but for whatever reason, nobody felt they needed to do that. So I watched it for 2 solid years until I was like 39 years old, and at that point, the skin around the lump, and I worried about it every single day. I was so obsessed and fixated about it. The skin around the lump started really puckering up, and it was almost folding over itself, and I said, this is definitely not normal. This can't be normal. This didn't happen with any of my other lumps. So I got up all my nerve. I told my father, the doctor, and I told Jaime, who is my work partner and life partner, I told them I have to go and find out about this again. And my father, you know, I thought he was going to really collapse because, you know, his mother had died of breast cancer, and he looked at this lump that I had, and I think he knew right then and there that it was serious. So we went to a surgeon, and the surgeon took one look and said, "This is very advanced breast cancer. How long have you had it? What, you know, when, you know?" And he said, "This is very advanced. You need a bilateral radical mastectomy right away." Well, I was really shocked to hear that because the lump was kind of up under my arm, and I was 39 years old. My breasts were like not up under my arm, you know. They were like hanging down. They weren't as perky as they were when I was younger. And I said, "But it's not even in my breast." I mean, the thought had never even entered my mind that I would have to have my breast removed, not even one of them, let alone two. And I said, "Oh, forget it." And the doctor was just too negative and too extreme. And having worked as a nurse for many, many years, I really knew that, you know, radical mastectomies weren't even being done anymore because they were so harmful to the lymphatic system and the musculature. And I said, "I can't have that done." So I walked out of that office. My father and Jaime were listening at the door, and they were like, you know, just horrified. We were all three horrified, and I looked at the three of us stood in the hallway, and I said to my father, I said, "I am so mad because, you know, I just moved back down to South Florida to be near you. I just paid off my car. I just met Jaime. We started a little business together, and I'm not going to be able to enjoy any of it because now I'm going to die." And, you know, my father was like, "That's what you're worried about, the car and, you know, I mean, that kind of thing?" And I said, and Jaime, I looked at Jaime and I said, "We have to be macrobiotic because I just know that that's what I need to do." And Jaime, who is from Colombia, said, he's from Colombia, South America, and he was, you know, with me on everything, but he said, "I don't know what that is. What is that?" And I said, "Well, I don't know a whole lot about it, but it's, you know, a way of eating." And I said, "I've had two very good friends in my life that have gotten cancer and turned to macrobiotics, and they were able to heal themselves and live. And one of them was a medical doctor, and his own colleagues, he was a friend of my father's, in fact, and his own colleagues said, 'Your cancer is too advanced. We can't treat it medically. There's no point.'" And they wouldn't treat him medically, even though he would have done everything medical that he could get his hands on. And so he turned to macrobiotics, and his cancer cleared up. And not only that, but he became this amazing, incredible man and a friend of mine. We were able to relate to each other really well. And I said, "I know these two people, and I know that this is what I need to do. I know that it is. I don't know what else I'm going to do, but I know we're going to do macrobiotics. We're going to start today. We're not eating another thing unless it's macrobiotic." And I said, "And I don't know what we can eat except for brown rice, azuki beans, and miso soup. That's all I know." And we're going to go to the health food store and get some of those things, and we're going to find out more. And that day, you know, I went off of everything I could go off of, cold turkey. I stopped drinking coffee. I stopped eating any kind of meat and dairy. I stopped drinking alcohol. I really wasn't doing drugs by that time in my life, but I was like, "I'm never touching another drug at all." And I wanted to stop sugar, but sugar turned out to be very tough. And I didn't even realize until several years later what an addiction and problem salt was. So I wasn't even aware of the issue of salt. It took me several years into macrobiotics to understand the whole concept of salt, learn how to use it properly, and really, you know, realize what an addictive substance it was. I was very focused on the sugar, and I have to admit the chocolate. I did have a lot of trouble with sugar and chocolate, but I really cut down and was learning to find healthy alternatives. I also started, I had a consultation immediately, like within a day, got the whole list of what to eat, what not to eat, did not understand a lot of it, but followed it completely and totally. I mean, I wouldn't touch a thing if it wasn't on that list. I had the list with me when we went to the store so that I could remember, you know, what I could eat or not eat, because the lists were huge of the things I was allowed to have, the things I couldn't have. So I went and got a gas stove. That completely rang true to me, that I had to cook on gas. I didn't even question that. So many people that I counsel now are like, I can't do the gas stove. I don't want to do that. You mean I can't use the microwave? And to me, it was like, that was a no-brainer. I got it immediately. I have to cook on gas. I went out and got a gas stove. I went through huge issues with that, which are kind of funny, but they're too long to go into. But I lived in a condo, and it was like totally against the law to have gas. So I had to like sneak in the gas stove, and we evolved from a little two-burner camping stove to like a full-fledged cooktop with, you know, propane tanks, totally illegal, but I didn't care. It was, for me, it was life or death. And Jaime and I had been running a little vegan delivery service. And when I say that I ate terrible and then I say I ran a vegan delivery service, it really does, it doesn't sound very, it says, it's like, what? But vegan, I mean, we could eat all kinds of junk, sugar, all kind. We could eat everything as long as it wasn't an animal food. So, there, you know, my vegan delivery service, food delivery service, and diet were completely worlds apart, another galaxy from what macrobiotics is. But and I was a little concerned how I was going to run that business, and I didn't want to let it go because it was my livelihood, it was my identity, it was my sense of accomplishment, it was my life, and I wanted to hold on to it for all I had. And everyone around me told me, you have to keep doing it, you can't let it go. I mean, the attitude was, if you give up these things in your life, you're laying down and dying. And Jaime told me the opposite. He said, I won't be by your side and help you if you don't stop trying to run the business and doing all of these things in your life that are going to take you away from healing, from taking care of yourself. And he really made it clear, I'm not going to be with you if you don't, you know, focus on taking care of yourself. And, you know, I had to give that a lot of thought. And what I realized was, you know, I'm afraid to let all of these things go. A lot of people that I work with, you know, a lot of clients of mine, I hear now, you know, they're afraid of the same things. They don't want to let anything go. But the fact is, if you don't let the things that don't matter go, you can't focus on healing your body. And if you don't heal and you're not here, your money, your job, your identity, your responsibility to the community, pressure from your colleagues, none of that's going to matter if you're not healthy and alive to do those things. So what I finally realized was, I need to focus on living. And if I live, I can pick all of those things back up. And hopefully, and I didn't even know it at the time, but I had a sense of it, I will move on beyond all of those things that I'm stuck in now, the things that are contributing to my illness and my issues, emotional and physical, I can let all of that go and I can move forward into something new. So I let everything go with everybody screeching around me, "You can't give up, you can't give up." And I really said to them, "I'm not giving up. I'm just shifting my focus so that I can get well." And that's what I did. So in the midst of all of that, I did have to go and find out about the medical aspect of everything. So I went to, luckily for me, I found a very good surgeon who said, "I will take out the lump, but I want to take out all of the lymph nodes under that arm because the lump has been there for so long and it's so close to the lymph nodes." And he said, "And I want permission to remove the entire breast if I can't get clear margins around the tumor." And I said, "Okay, but please try not to take off my breast. I'm only 39 years old. I don't want to lose my breast." So I went into the surgery not really knowing what the outcome was going to be. But when I woke up, I had my breast, and I had, you know, like, terrible pain from the, not from taking out the tumor, but from the lymph node dissection. It was a big surgery and very painful, and I had these drains in my side that he said he would remove before I went home the next day. But he couldn't remove the drains. That was an interesting development. He couldn't remove the drains. They were there to drain lymphatic fluid. And these drains were, the lymphatic fluid was pouring out of my body into these drains. And he never saw anything like that. He said, "I've never seen lymphatic fluid drain like that." And he said, "I'm going to leave them in until you come back next week for a, you know, checkup." So I went home with the drains, and I was emptying the lymphatic fluid out, and I just kept visualizing. It was like somebody poked a hole in my side, and this lymphatic fluid just was pouring out of my body that couldn't get out for my entire life. My whole body was clogged up. I think I was born clogged up. And finally, it had an outlet, and I just visualized all of the toxins and the chemicals and the drugs I had used and the cancer cells just pouring out of my body. And every time I emptied these drains, which was several times a day, I just visualized pouring all of that out of my body. And it turned out that they could not remove the drains for 6 solid weeks. It was like he had never had anything like that. He said, "I've never had a patient that have had them in even for 2 weeks, let alone 6 weeks." And during the 6 weeks when they couldn't remove the drains, they could not start any treatment on me. So I had like this little 6 week hiatus where I could just focus on my body and being, eating my macrobiotic food, going to the beach, walking on the beach, singing at the top of my lungs, doing all of my macrobiotic practices. And I was feeling pretty good considering what I was going through. I found out in the interim that I had, that the reports had come back from the lymph node dissection and that I had 12 positive lymph nodes. So the surgeon, who was a really nice positive man, said, "This is not good. This is terrible. This is really bad news. It really lowers your chances of survival." I mean, he turned into a little bit negative, and he wasn't a negative man, but it was so serious. It was such a serious, you know, prognosis. But I got to live in this little, you know, blissful world for 6 weeks before I had to face reality. And when they took out the drains, then I had to start finding out what I was going to do for further treatment. And what they were recommending was a stem cell transplant. And I ended up at the University of Miami Sylvester Cancer Center. And I met with this huge panel of doctors. There must have been like 12 of them at the table. And they said, "You know, your situation is so grave. The you know, cancer spread to the muscles, the nerves, the skin, the lymph nodes. It's probably everywhere in your body by now. You need the stem cell transplant. And they explained that it was so horrific. You had to be in the hospital for 6 weeks. And I knew from being a nurse and working in a hospital for many, many years that 6 weeks could easily turn into 6 months. And they were only giving me 6 months to a year to live, and I said, I'm going to go into the hospital. I'll never come out. And I said, no, I can't do it. I won't be able to eat my macrobiotic food. I can't do it. I won't be able to breathe fresh air. I won't live. I know I won't survive it, and I refused it. And I found a doctor who said, I can give you chemo, and it'll work just as well. And by that time, the chemo sounded pretty good to me compared to the stem cell transplant. So he got out his big statistic book, and he went over, like, this chemo, that chemo, and we have this new one, Taxol. It's our secret weapon. And he said, that one's going to definitely take care of any cancer cells that the other ones miss. And with all of that and radiation, and we'll follow that up with tamoxifen, with all of that combined, that brings your chance of survival, of a five-year survival rate, all the way up to 30%. And I said, 30%? Are you kidding me? That's terrible. And he said, no, it isn't, because if you don't do any of this, you have 0% of surviving. So 30% is really good. Well, it didn't sound good to me, but I quickly started doing my own calculations. And I said, I'm going to add in acupuncture, shiatsu massage, walks on the beach, and I'm going to add in the macrobiotic food. That's my secret weapon. He has Taxol as his secret weapon. I have macrobiotic food as my secret weapon. And I said, what would I calculate the macrobiotic food at? I would have to calculate that at least that that's 100%, because it's everything. The food that you eat changes your blood, changes your cells. It changes everything on a cellular level. And I said, I have to give the food 100%. So when I added up all of my calculations, including the chemo and the radiation and tamoxifen, I was way over 100% chance of surviving for 5 years. And I said, that sounds much better to me. And, you know, it wasn't as simple as that, but because of a tremendous pressure, even from strangers that heard about what I was going through and were calling me and telling me, you have to do the chemo, you have to do it. Total strangers, friends of friends, friends of acquaintances. I ended up doing the chemo. I think I was more afraid of the chemo than I was of the cancer. But I ended up doing it. And I have to say, because of the macrobiotic food, I went through it really well. No major complications, no pneumonia, no infections. And I had a strict rule not to medicate the medication. So I took the chemo, but I did not take any of the other bags full of drugs that they gave me. I mean, they gave me prescriptions for everything that could possibly happen. I didn't take any of that because, again, having been a nurse, I knew the side effects of those drugs, and I said, I'm not taking drugs to medicate drugs. I'm only taking the drug to medicate the cancer. And I followed that throughout, and I got through it all, I developed a system of how to do the diet, the macrobiotic diet, in relation to the chemo, which I still teach people today. I think it's very effective. And I got to the radiation part. That's a huge, long story, but I'm going to shorten it and just say that I used fresh aloe vera on my skin to prevent radiation burns. And it was so effective. I did not tell the doctor I was doing that because he was not a nice man. And I didn't want to listen to any of his negative comments about it. I just knew that that's how I felt I could protect my skin. at the end of my radiation, he demanded that I tell him what I did, and I told him what I used, and they use it now at that hospital and at several hospitals down here as their standard skincare protocol for radiation. So I feel like I was really responsible for that. And then I got to the tamoxifen part, and I did not want to take that either. I said, no, enough is enough. And I had a lot of pressure that I had to take that. And I had a girlfriend who had had cancer and more positive lymph nodes than me. I met her during this whole cancer experience, and she was going off of her 5 years of tamoxifen the week I was supposed to start mine. And I saw her, I saw like this whole picture of me in 5 years going off of mine. And I said, I'm going to take it. I'm going to do what, you know, Leah did. I'm going to take it. And I did. I started taking it. And I had the good fortune of being able to see Michio, because in those years, during that time, he was in Florida a lot. And I would meet with him every time he was here. And he told me I should take it for the first year. And after about a year, he started telling me, I don't think you should continue it. I didn't even ask him. He just told me, I think you should stop the tamoxifen. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, he was very adamant, you have to stop it. And I was like, no, I made a commitment to take it for 5 years. I can do it. But one day I woke up and something in me just said to me, stop taking it. And I just completely stopped it. I did not tell the doctor. I said, you know, the doctor's doing his thing. I'm doing mine. I can't deal with the negativity of it all. So I hope he's not listening. I'm sure he's not. But I didn't, you know, he would say, are you still taking your tamoxifen? And I would say, yes. And then the 5 years went by and I was done officially, and that's what happened with tamoxifen. And during the time that I had the chemo, I had like these really vivid like hallucinations and visions. And one vision that I had, which was very amazing, was that I actually saw myself. This was early on in my illness. I saw myself at my own funeral. I saw myself watching my own funeral. I saw all of my friends and family at my funeral, and I saw them looking at their watches going, when's this going to be over? I mean, we're sorry that Gail died, but we have to get on with life. We have things to do, places to go, people to see. And I was like observing that and going, oh my God, I mean, life is going to go on. I'm going to be dead. I'm going to miss out on life. And I saw, like simultaneously, I saw how I had wasted my life because I didn't understand life. I thought it was endless. I thought I could do anything. I never related to taking care of my own body. And it was like this gigantic awakening. It was like somebody like hit me in the forehead on my third eye and opened it up. And all of a sudden, I got everything, and I said, I want to live now that I understand all of this. And I had this huge, strong will to live so that I could experience life in a happy, pleasant way instead of the over-emotional drama queen soap opera mess that I had been up until the time of my cancer. I really think that might be what the gift of illness means. Anyway, it's been 15 years now. I did live, and I actually moved forward. I picked up everything that I had to let go of in order to heal years before. Jaime and I created a new business. It's called Holy Macro. We do private cooking classes, consultations, and a prepared meal macrobiotic food delivery service. And you can read more about it on our website, which is Holy, Wholly, macrobiotics.com. And we have a weekly menu and newsletter that we send out, which you can sign up for on the website, or you can, you know, call or email me to sign up for that, and my email is holymacro@bellsouth.net. So I'm going to stop talking now and open this up for questions and discussion.
Oh, great. Thanks. Thanks, Gail. What an incredible story, really. Just some of the things you've been through is just phenomenal, amazing. And the lymph nodes, draining lymph nodes for 6 weeks, I think that was really very significant in part of your healing process.
I do too.
Yes, that's amazing. Well, I'm going to, since there's only a small group, I'm going to unmute the entire conference, so feel free to join in and ask any questions you like. If there's any questions, feel free to go ahead and speak up. Hello?
I have a question.
Yes.
It's Cheryl. Great story, Gail.
Thanks, Cheryl.
And I love what you've done with your kitchen, by the way, the photograph. Just wonderful. I love your six burners.
me too. Me too. We had to move out of the condo into a house. Mainly, the whole motivation for that, because I really loved my condo, but I had to have a real gas stove.
Yeah.
I had to cook on gas, and I, you know, I don't know, that was something that rang so true for me, you know, and I just wanted a legal gas stove.
Worth the move, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
What advice can you offer? You did do a healing diet in the beginning, right?
Yes.
What advice can you give as far as life beyond the healing diet, like kind of merging back into the mainstream, but maybe like going to an event or a function, like a wedding or a vacation? How do you do those things?
I do a whole lecture on that. I think I've even written about that in one of my newsletters. It's such a great question. I'm glad you asked that. I meant to say that, but I didn't. But I was put on such a strict healing diet at the beginning, and I did say that. I followed it to the T. I mean, I would not touch anything if it wasn't on that healing diet. Unfortunately, nobody told me, you know, now you can go off of your healing diet and widen your diet within the macrobiotic scope. No one made that clear to me. And I stayed on that strict healing diet for probably 2 years until I went to the Kushi Institute. The first time I went up there at the meal, I remember they had cornbread. And when I bit into the cornbread, it was sweet. And I just about, you know, fainted. I said, "You're kidding me. I can't believe they would serve this." And so then I had to have this whole re-education about how you can use appropriate foods, appropriate sweeteners in, you know, in your macrobiotic diet. So I learned about all of that. And I think that I learned, and I specialize now in helping people to find the healthier substitute for the things that they desire. And I really advise people, you know, to pick and choose wisely what you can live with, what you can't, you know, what you can't live without. And then I really like people to learn about the healthier choices, because there is a healthy, you know, there's a healthy alternative to any unhealthy food that you are interested in. Now, when it comes to eating out or traveling, I don't put myself in situations where I can't have healthy food. If I'm going to travel, I make sure I either stay somewhere where there's a kitchen, and I have a blast. I love going to new markets and new grocery stores and cooking for myself. Or I make plans in advance with the cruise line or the hotel or whatever to have, you know, foods available. There's always produce. There's always fish. If I have to, I bring my own grains. If I have to, I'll bring a electric grain, you know, rice pot so I can cook my grains. And I make do for the few days or few weeks. It's like not a long time. The important thing is that when I'm at home, I eat the best I can every single day of my life. I never skip a day of doing the very best I can for my body, and always, not just the food, all of the lifestyle accessories that come along with macrobiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, when I go on a little trip, I just pretend like I'm back on the healing diet. It's a narrower, simpler, very simple diet. I figure it's good for my body for the few days or few weeks. And then I get back home and I widen out to all of the fantastic macrobiotic foods, not the narrow diet. And I don't have a problem with it because I have no desire at all to eat any of those unhealthy foods. And my body doesn't tolerate them at all.
Huh.
And I've learned that over the years. I used to try cheating on my big addiction chocolate, and I learned, my body taught me after like a few years of cheating. I tried every kind of chocolate, organic, non-dairy, grain-sweetened, raw, everything, dark, everything. And I tried it in every different brand. And my body reacted every single time. And I finally said, I have to let this go. I have to let the chocolate go. And I did, but my body taught me. And I encourage people, let your body teach you. It will. It'll show you that it doesn't like that food. It doesn't do well with it. And it's your best teacher.
It is. That's a great lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
In a great way. I'd love to see that your newsletter. I don't receive it yet. I'll sign up for it. But
oh, definitely sign up for it. And if I'll look and find the one about eating out, because I do have, I think I have a couple about that subject.
I'll remind you as well. I'll pop you an email.
Right, right.
And thanks, Gail.
Oh, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
I would just like to say something. I'm Annette, and I'm a longtime friend of Gail's, known her since high school, and she has been, Gail, you have truly been an inspiration to me through all of this. I think I got into macrobiotics back in the 80s and was in and out of macrobiotics, not for any major health issues, just because I recognized it as a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been a great support and great inspiration, and I really, I mean, the way that Gail has stuck with it through and taken it so seriously, like she said, when she goes out to eat and will bring her condiments, if she can just order a basic fish or vegetable and bring along a condiment or a dessert to make it a more fulfilling meal is great.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, it really is a good idea. So, and I also wanted to ask, I mean, it seems that sometimes people do tend to get a little swayed in the direction of their health, and like when you tried your chocolate or this and that. And if you do something like that and your body doesn't respond well, is that the best time to go back to your basics and just get back down to your brown rice, your more simple foods to try to get back into balance?
I think it really depends how long, you know, you've been eating macrobiotically, you know, and how much you sway. For example, I had to go out someplace recently, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to eat as well as I usually eat. I don't really worry about it. I did not cheat. I didn't eat any dairy. I didn't eat meat, but I just didn't have my really well-cooked meal. I don't worry about it if I go out one night and I don't eat as good as I usually do, because I never cheat, and it's like I think my body gets back into the groove very quickly. I would worry if I constantly did it. You know, for example, I don't drink alcohol. I used to drink before I had cancer. I stopped immediately when I got cancer, like I said. After the whole, you know, after like a couple of years, several people, you know, a few counselors that I had gone to, including Michio Kushi himself, said, you can have a drink. But I said, where am I going to draw the line? why would I do that to my body? My body's been through so much. I'm so lucky that I didn't end up with the cancer spreading to my liver, my lungs, my bones. Why would I put my liver through the stress of having to process alcohol? And where would I draw the line? So, you know, I guess it really just depends. So I made a decision. I'm just not going to drink, period. And I pretty much made that decision about everything. I'm not going to cheat, period. So if I was to sway, and I did cheat and sway with chocolate, if I was to sway, I just immediately go back to my regular eating. I don't feel like I have to go through the whole cleansing process for one isolated incident. But if the incidents aren't isolated, and if you're not doing well, if you're not feeling well, then it doesn't hurt to get some advice, you know, from a counselor, and, you know, maybe do some type of cleansing program for a short period of time.
Great idea. And, you know, I was thinking that it is true that once you've lived the macrobiotic lifestyle and eaten more purely, you do tend to recognize very quickly how something doesn't agree with you.
Oh, it's almost instantaneous. When I first started, some of my teachers and some of the people I would meet would say, I went out to dinner and I ate this or that, and I immediately got this blister on my lip or a rash or this blotch on my nose. And I would think, these people are so crazy. They're so extreme. They're so obsessed with all of this, and it can't be possible. They can't have a reaction and notice it. I couldn't notice anything in my body. I was so toxic. My body was so overwhelmed, I couldn't notice a thing. And I didn't believe these people, but now, you know, it didn't take too long either. Within a few years, I could notice it, like with the chocolate. The minute I ate it, I had a reaction. The minute I ate it, until I finally had to accept that it bothered my body terribly, and I had to stop. I couldn't keep doing it to myself. So, you know, your body does let you know right away, unless it's so overwhelmed and so, you know, toxic from multiple sources that you can't discern any of the symptoms. But the symptoms are there. You know, you just need to start simplifying your diet enough. And that doesn't mean you can't eat fantastic food. It just means you have to start eliminating some of the toxic things that you eat until you can start to recognize the different symptoms that your body tells you, which is part of what macrobiotics is all about, and it's one of the most fascinating, fun, exciting parts of it.
Oh, yes, so true.
Mm-hmm.
True. Well, thank you very much. It was very, very...
Thank you, Ned. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Thank
I know. Sorry you didn't have a bigger crowd, Gail.
Well,
you definitely have a command performance there.
Yes, definitely. But fortunately, we're recording this, so people
yeah.
like to hear this afterwards. We do have a fairly large following who listen in after these recordings, including people overseas who
to
follow this. Yes. So this is great. And asking the questions also is very helpful to them as well. So we are out of time. I do want to thank you all again. Gail, maybe you want to mention your website and phone number if you want, and the services you provide.
Okay. The name of our business is called Holy Macro, and we're a full-service health and nutrition and macrobiotic educational and teaching facility. We have a beautiful kitchen, like Cheryl commented on. You can see all of that and lots more on our website, which is Holy, Holly, macrobiotics.com. And you can contact me for questions or information about our services at 954-764-6371 or my email, holymacro@bellsouth.net. And if you want to receive our weekly menu and newsletter, contact me in any of those ways, and I'll put you on the mailing list. It's very educational and informative.
Great. Thanks, Gail. Thanks so much. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being the inspiration to so many people.
Thanks.
Yes, and this call, just want to remind, this call is sponsored by Karen Allen Fiber Arts, fabulous 100% cashmere knitwear. Our business is located in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, so if you ever are in the Berkshires and in Great Barrington, stop by and visit Karen Allen Fiber Arts at in 8 Railroad Street in Great Barrington. Their phone number is 413-528-8555. That's 413-528-8555. On online at www.karenallen-fiberarts, all one word, karenallen-fiberarts.com. You can visit them. In fact, Karen Allen will be next Sunday's guest, sharing her story about how she got rid of Lyme disease without the use of antibiotics. That should be very interesting. And tomorrow night at 9 p.m., call in, and we will have our special guest, Jill Schneider, who recovered from cervical cancer using only macrobiotics. That should be wonderful, too. So I'm going to stop the recording right now, and thank you again.